Let's Talk Legal.
It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's talk legal this morning with Cecil Harvell here in the studio. And Cecil, good morning to you,
sir. Good morning, Lockwood. How are you?
Doing well.
It's good to be with you this morning.
And the, you know, as always, it's interesting to hear you and Wes talking about some of the activities of legal, you know, issues. So what's on tap today?
Yeah, Lockwood, let's talk today about some real property issues. Of course, I've always been intrigued by why do we call an interest in land real property? As if, you know, $100,000 CD is not real property, you know, but it isn't. Real property by definition is land. And personal property is more or less everything else. So real property is a land holding. And one of the fundamental things that always gets questioned at our office, at any good lawyer's office, Lockwood, is, well, you know, I have my deed to my land, but I don't think I ever got a deed to the house. I don't know that I can find my deed to the house. And what, of course, is happening here, Lockwood, is that we lawyers have to make everything a little bit complicated. And there's that word in the deed called appurtenances and improvements thereto.
Gotcha.
And so the title is actually to the land, to the lot, to the block in the subdivision, to the tract or acreage of property, and then any improvement, any building of a home, a barn, a fence, a pool, any kind of improvement then follows as the title moves from place to place to place or from person to person. So you're not going to find, when you search through your safety deposit box, a deed to the house, a bill of sale to the home. You're not going to find that. What you're going to find is your deed to your land. And then any improvement that your contractor happened to make to your land is included now as the title to the property.
Does that, with that appurtenance,
yes,
does it change the explanation or the design or the terms of that deed? Because you've got situations where you have, for example, leaseholding improvements on property.
Right.
So,
again, any improvement, is just going to, be attached to the land and is then going to pass, if there's a conveyance of title on that land, then all improvements, all leasehold improvements,
okay,
anything of that nature is going to pass to the next, landowner. And of course, the person who's most interested in these improvements, is our tax office.
Right.
Because of course, it changes
the
dramatically
value.
The value of the property based on the improvement. Now, Lockwood, another interesting tidbit about real property is how does one obtain title to real property? And what our listeners sometimes we know this, but we don't quite focus on it except on Tuesday mornings,
right,
at 7:30. And that is that, yes, absolutely, Lockwood, we can obtain title to property through a deed. And this is a very common, most common way in which we all obtain property. But Lockwood, there are many times that we obtain title to property through an estate, the last will,
right,
and testament,
right,
or the estate of a decedent, even if there is no last will and testament, and it's passing according to statute in North Carolina. So let's talk about this a little bit. The title searcher goes to Beaufort, goes to Craven County, goes to New Hanover County Courthouse, and goes to the Register of Deeds and sees that the current property, or is told that the current property, is owned by Mr. Jones. And so he or she finds the deed into Mr. Jones. And he usually is able to ask Mr. Jones, you know, when did you get this property?
Right.
And of course there's some sort of date or range of date. Mm-hmm. So they begin there. They then look back to see how the title came into Mr. Jones. And keep in mind that it's possible that Mr. Jones does not have a deed to his property, that he inherited this property through the estate of his mother and father. And so the next thing that would happen is the title searcher would see that, well, the title, we can get the title back to the mother and the father, and now we find the death certificates of the mother and father. We now go to the estates division of that courthouse.
Okay.
And we see where the will left all of the property to Mr. Jones. So Mr. Jones does not have a deed. Mr. Jones obtained the property through the estate of his mother and or father, whatever the case might be. This is quite common, Lockwood, that in the chain of title, there is a conveyance of title through an estate. The estates division becomes absolutely critical, if you will, the best friend of a good title searcher, because many, many properties are going to pass according to a valid estate.
Well, what happens to the deed? There was a deed there, was there not?
No, there is no deed. There is no deed. And this is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's why we're talking about this today. There many times is not a deed, Lockwood. There's no requirement that there be a deed. Estate practitioners tend to, when they're settling an estate, make it a little bit easier on the public record by maybe preparing an executor's deed or an administrator's deed through the estate out to the heir. But this is not required, because the title passes according to the valid estate on record. So you can see where this is all interconnected, the right hand and the left hand. This is why it's very critical that the estate be valid.
This is where, I mean, the documents have to be in order.
They do. Just yesterday, a call from a gentleman out of state. He is a remote relative of a lady here in Carteret County that has died with an interest in real property.
Uh-huh.
He is actually a nephew several times removed, if you will. There are no children. There are no parents. There are no grandchildren. There are no brothers and sisters. And this gentleman has had a real problem, if you will, or some real hurdles to overcome to, quote, get an estate open.
Right.
And, of course, as I'm talking to this gentleman on the phone, I'm realizing, yep, I bet you are, because once that estate is opened and he has valid authority through the estates division to deal with this real property, then you can imagine, Lockwood, this plays into what we're talking about today. The title to that property is then going to be affected. So it's very important that the estate be valid, that all of the requirements of opening up an estate be satisfied and be looked at very carefully, et cetera, because this gentleman now is going to now become, if you will, vested as a fiduciary, granted, only as an administrator, but he is going to be vested with the authority to deal with this property, this land, real property. So there is a great tie-in, if you will, between real property and the estates division of any particular county where that property happens to be located. That's also an interesting thing to just mention very quickly. Let's say that we have a will in Carteret County.
Mm-hmm.
But we, and an estate in Carteret County, but the property is located in Lenore County.
Right.
You see.
Yeah.
There is going to need to be a filing of the appropriate documents from Carteret County in Lenore County to show Lenore County that register of deeds and the division of estates in that county where the title to this property, vest.
Okay, when you say vest, I mean resigns.
Where it lands. Where the title happens to be, with Mr. Jones, as we discussed earlier. So
I'm sitting here, I'm looking at, you know, you never,
it's not quite as complicated, maybe, Lockwood, as your,
it's just the paperwork. I mean,
well, it's pretty routine to we lawyers. It's pretty routine. I mean, recently I ran across a deed, that was done from an heir to an heir, if you will, without the estate being opened, officially opened. And of course, this is a real problem because, and that deed is really kind of a nullity, if you will, has no force and effect because the estate that's underlying that deed was not officially opened and not officially certified by the clerk's division of the estate's division of the county where that property happened to be located. But absolutely, Lockwood, property passes, you know, to my children, a third, a third, and a third, my four children, my two children, and we find the will, we find the estate, and we then see very clearly that the property vests in the collective children. And that is, in fact, the operative document, transfer document. There is no deed. There just simply is the estate.
All right. We're talking with Cecil Harvell this morning about the issue of real property. That's the real question. We've got a caller standing by. I'll tell you what. We're going to go to the caller before we go to the break. Let's go to Walter in Alliance. Walter, good morning. We've got Cecil Harvell here. Yes, sir.
Well, this isn't this is more of a real estate question than a real property question, but I have a friend who's leasing a property who pays cash. The landlord does not give them a receipt, and I believe it's a illegal duplex. Is there an enforceable lease, in fact, there? Is that a non-enforceable lease if they were to leave early or to break a lease?
Well, we'd have to the specifics of this are going to be answered by looking at the lease first, if there is in fact a legal document that a lawyer can review, then that is going to be the first avenue of inquiring about the various rights and responsibilities between the landlord and the tenant. If there is no lease agreement, or if the lease agreement is silent as to the issue that's on the table, then we would have to then see whether or not whether there is a statute in North Carolina that would apply. And there are just numerous statutes that come into play in the landlord-tenant arena and kind of dictate what the rights and obligations of the landlord and the tenant happen to be. This sounds like a kind of, if you will, a fancy way. It's not, but possibly kind of like Lockwood, the triple net lease. I mean, right. He is saying that the landlord pays the rent, the tenant pays the rent, pays the taxes, what little bit of upkeep is done on the property is done by the tenant. The tenant more or less is in complete control of the property and is responsible for all of the various liabilities and financial obligation of the property. That's similar to a triple net lease. And so we kind of go from there. We'd have to look at the lease agreement and then answer the question based on whether or not there's anything in writing.
Okay. Despite the fact that it's a duplex and possibly a in violation of a zoning code of a municipality?
Well, now we have a third party that would be interested in knowing the use of this property. And if it's in contrary to public policy or law or zoning laws or environmental laws, then all of those things would be looked at by the county, the government, if you will, that is overseeing that particular property. And that's an issue that is out there, whether or not it's related to the landlord or the tenant. That's our third party, you know, government interest in seeing that property is properly, is being used consistent with its zoning, consistent with what is applicable for public policy, that's not being used for illegal purposes, things of that nature. And those laws would apply no matter who happens to have the rights to the property.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much. That's Walter and Elias with that question. We've got joining us this morning, of course, Cecil Harvell with Let's Talk Legal here. If you'd like to ask a question of our guest, if you will, the number 910-353-4674. That's 353-4674. The other number to call in locally, 247-7282. That's 247-7282. And, of course, toll-free 800-818-2255. Let's Talk Legal here this morning with Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins. And by the way, if you'd like to get more information directly from their office, they are located at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, a local number, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or online at harvellandcollins.com. Spell that out, Harvell and A-N-D, harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, we're talking about real property.
We are.
And, you know, it's really, in many instances, the lion's share of folks' primary wealth.
Well, there's just no question about that. In other words, so many times, Lockwood, the most valuable asset of a mother or father or grandmother, granddad, whatever the case might be, is, in fact, you know, their home place,
right?
Their family farm, their property. We all strive, don't we, historically, or the traditional format of, you know, having your home paid for. I mean, this is a typical thing that certainly our parents,
right,
Lockwood,
right,
attempted to achieve in their life, was to retire with the home
no mortgage. Right.
So it is a very valuable asset for most people. And so that, of course, is one of the reasons that we concentrate many times protecting this asset, if you will, from any kind of nursing home lien or any other kind of lien that at the end of life could potentially affect the ownership of this property. Now, we've talked about those subjects before on the program here, but, you know, we're kind of touching and concerning it right now at this point, because you're so correct, Lockwood, that our real property holding for many, many people is one of our most significant holdings. Now, we've talked about the fact that, yes, sometimes we then deed the property. Sometimes it passes through our estate.
Right.
Once we have the title to the property, by whatever reason we have it, then you do need to kind of analyze your title. For instance, if you did inherit your property, I have this going on right now where a son got his property through the will of his mother. Well, of course, it's in his name. He happens to be married and has been married for a long, long time. Well, he is asking the question, I understand that if I die, this will go to my wife. Well, no, Lockwood, because it has not been, if you will, retitled in the name of the husband and the wife. And therefore, there now needs to be a deed prepared from him to he and his wife, which he, of course, would sign, to he and his wife as tenants by entirety. And now we have it placed in the tenants by entirety law in the state of North Carolina, where the wife, of course, would inherit by operation of law. But if he just inherited it, which he did, and he leaves it in his name, and he never retitles it in the name of he and his wife, then it is going to pass according to his estate, just like it passed to him from his mother's estate. And that, of course, if he has a will and it leaves the property completely to his wife, then we land at the same place.
Right.
But if he doesn't have a will, then we're not going to land at the same place, because the title of that property would vest partly in the wife, but also partly in his children. Okay. If he makes no will and if he has no deed prepared. So what I'm getting at here is that our listeners need to analyze how they obtained their title and then analyze, where they wish that title to vest upon their death, and direct that title either in a will or either through even the preparation and recording of a deed.
All right. We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. We're talking about Let's Talk Legal here on the talk station. We've got a few more minutes left in the program. If you'd like to call in with a question, you're welcome to do so. 252 area code 247-7282. That's 247-7282. And of course, 910 area code 353-4674. 353-4674. Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell, and we've got joining us Cecil here in the studio this morning. Those numbers, 252 area code 247-7282 and 910 area code 353-4674. We've got about 3 minutes to go, Cecil.
Yeah. There's so much to discuss, Lockwood, about real property, and we could continue this discussion next week. I mean, one of the things is that, you know, it's very important that our listeners understand that the importance of a title examination, the importance of understanding any restrictions on your property, any restriction as to use. These are all sometimes contained in organized restrictive covenants when it is a developed piece of property, a PUD or a subdivision or something of that nature. But Lockwood, you know, historically restrictions on properties were contained in the deed. And literally you would read the deed and see, this particular oak tree, cannot be disturbed in any format.
Yeah.
The property must remain in the Jones family.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. Who is the Jones family? Does that mean just the children or does that mean the wives and, siblings, the wives and spouses of various children in the family? You have to look at the terminology in the deed. And this is what a title searcher is charged to do, and then bring those to the attention of the innocent buyer. In the state of North Carolina, of course, it's caveat emptor, meaning buyer beware. It is the buyer's obligation to determine all of the ins and outs, if you will, of their property before they close, because after they close, after they purchase the property, it's yours.
Okay, and of course, situations we don't have time to get into this today, but environmental issues,
absolutely,
and of course, as you pointed out a few moments ago, things like alluded to easements, how you can use the property, who else has privilege to use the property, for example, for transportation purposes or utility purposes,
correct? Who can cross over your property?
And so this is really a big challenge for the fiduciary. Responsibility if somebody's handling an estate.
It is. It's, I think the point of today more than anything else is to know that real property, transfer of real property interest is many times an estate issue. We have to look to the administrator, look to the executor, and even see whether, when and if they do any transferring of the property, is it done in accordance with a valid estate, like this deed I spoke to you earlier about, where there's a deed but there's no estate. That's a problem.
That is a problem.
Right.
Is there a way to work that out? You said, or is it basically the estate, the deed is nullified?
The deed is of no validity in that file, as far as I'm concerned, and most lawyers would agree, I think. But what will happen is there will need to be an estate.
Okay. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, and to remind you, that number, if you'd like to call them directly, 252 area code 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, or contact them via the digital form, harvellandcollins.com.